Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about.
Our guest this week is Emily Nussbaum. Emily is the television critic at The New Yorker, the winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Criticism, and the author of I Like to Watch, Arguing My Way Through the TV Revolution. Hey, Emily, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have
you. Yeah, we're so delighted to have you here talking about some of your favorite tools. Thanks for joining us.
So, Emily, why don't you talk about your first tool, which is Twitter?
Well, I realize, by the way, that picking Twitter may sound odd to people as a favorite tool, since it is, for completely logical reasons, widely regarded as both a civic crisis and a cesspool, just a terrible, terrible place that has a bad effect on everything. But the actual truth is that it is a pleasure to me almost all day long, and almost an addiction, but very useful to me professionally. For me, I use Twitter for a variety of different reasons, but I use it as a way of communicating with people about TV and breaking out of my bubble in terms of the people that I talk to about shows. Like, it gives me access to a global television audience, and I mean, you can't beat that with a stick, because I have no way to have a conversation with people all over the planet about their reactions to shows, and it turns me on to shows I hadn't heard of. I have constant conversations with other critics. I mean, there are a million things about it that I find satisfying. I find it to be one of those odd environments that is a fun break and social in a oddly undemanding way. It's a place where both introverts and extroverts mingle, and you can kind of take a break with it, and you can also let it overwhelm you. And I don't know. I started using it years ago because my husband, Clive Thompson, had written this piece about Twitter for the New York Times Magazine. And I read his piece, and it was, I'm usually an early adopter in a lot of things, and it seemed completely stupid to me because I just didn't understand why anything that had that short a span, like that had that tiny a bandwidth for expression, would work. And then there was this one night when I was lying in bed with my phone, and I think there was a star shower or some kind of other major event, and everybody was tweeting about it at once, and it suddenly clicked for me. And it was this sort of joint conversation that I started finding very beautiful and satisfying. I don't know really what else to say about it other than that it's such a central tool for me in daily life. And because I have a lot of followers on it, I mean, that can be dangerous, because I'm sure tomorrow I will make the tweet that destroys my career, which just seems to be the anxiety that everybody has for good reason. Mm-hmm. But I also, you know, I use it to brainstorm. I use it to throw out ideas. I use it to ask questions, and even in fact checking sometimes at The New Yorker, when we can't find something, I'll ask it on Twitter. So I have like a million different uses for it. And over the years, although I talk a lot about politics on Twitter, I've learned not to argue with people because it really is pointless. And I feel like once you stop doing that, it actually becomes kind of a satisfying place. I know this is not a universal experience. I'm sure if you talk to a lot of people, they would say, well, they find it useful for self-promotion, but it makes them anxious. But I have to say, so far, so good. And I say this against the tide of, you know, the undeniable problems with it. I feel like there's no point in acting as though it's not one of the main things that I do.
I find it fun. As a professional user, are there certain ways or certain things that you have discovered how to use it that maybe most people don't know? Are there kind of any power tips that you could pass on?
Well, I don't know if I have any power tips to pass on. I mean, I don't use it in a particularly sophisticated way. I don't have on my screen different search things. I don't keep lists and stuff like that. I remember when Twitter first started becoming a thing, David Carr from The Times had talked about using it, and he had basically said, well, you don't need to be on it all the time. You don't need to read everything. That would not make sense. What you do is you just dip a spoon in and just take a sip, and then you just move on and come back. And that always stuck with me because I felt like it's more like a ladle, but nonetheless, like that's the way I approach it, is not in a very orderly way. It's funny because I was on a plane this one time, and this guy next to me noticed that I had a lot of followers, and obviously I have a lot of followers because of my profession. But he looked at it and he said, "How do you do that? Like, how do you, like his focus was completely on the numbers because he was trying to advertise his sister's medical business or something like that. And the truth is, I do not find that it works well for me if I approach it with a mentality of it that's clearly professional, because then I think I will come off as phony baloney. And it's been weird for me with the book, because I do feel like the one thing that I've done with it that is just a clearly professional thing is obviously I'm going to use it to advertise the book. Like, it is my responsibility to help publicize the book. So yes, I have tweeted stuff out about that. But most of the time, I use it very haphazardly. I'm trying to think if I have any. I mean, the one thing that I sometimes tweet out articles that I like, and I do screen grabs. But I can't think of any. Like, what would be power user tips?
Like maybe some people might do a search for a hashtag of a certain sort, or a misspelling of it, or I don't know. There's kind of like lots of ways people kind of exploit eBay, or there's Google power.
You know, I don't use, the only time I use hashtags is I occasionally just get the strong impulse to tweet something from a TV show, and then I hashtag the TV show. I never use other hashtags. I don't even understand how people use them to search. I do search things, and of course, I'm a huge egotist, so I do like the name search on that. And when I'm researching things, sometimes I'll search and see what the conversation is. But yeah, it's for a person who uses Twitter a lot, I have a very blabbermouth, blunt way of using it. I think the one thing is that I in the past I found something satisfying about if somebody argued with me about something, like one of my TV opinions or something like that. Sometimes I found it useful to have sort of like a human conversation back and forth until it settled down and we could reach some kind of bridge. Now I don't do that, even though I find it kind of a satisfying thing, both emotionally and almost tactically, to do it, because it's not a good use of time. Like I just talk, at a certain point I was like, this isn't the place to do it. And also the biggest power and the biggest problem of Twitter is that it's simultaneously a whisper and a global megaphone. So there's a way in which you're always having conversations out loud. And so I try to be hyper aware of that. But, a lot of times I'm just making jokes, but you never know where a joke will lead. And when I'm watching a show, I will often throw out an insight about it, and then people respond to that. I mean, I'm the kind of person as a writer that I work well with brainstorms, and so I sort of deputize people to brainstorm with me. And then out of that, I often get ideas that I put in my pieces. But that's not really a recommendation for other people.
Well, that's a pro tip that, it's a collective action thing. That's pretty cool. So you have another similar tool that you like or use. That's GChat and
texting.
Texting. So tell us about that, and how is that different from Twitter?
Well, first of all, it's a private conversation rather than a public one. Second of all, like, there is nothing that is more central to my life in a lot of ways than simultaneously both G-chatting and texting, which are sort of indistinguishable to me because I do them both on my phone and on my computer. And I often use voice. I speak into my phone when I'm texting. I use Siri or whatever it is on the iPhone. So when I'm walking down the street, for instance, like, or if I'm texting with somebody, I will just use the voice recognition thing and I'll just dictate my text. So that actually makes it even more useful to me because it's basically a form of a conversation that's simultaneously written and savable. And I mean, everybody knows this. I mean, people G-chat and text all the time. But one reason that this came up when I was writing down tools was myself and my husband text all day long and GChat all day long. Like, sometimes I'm at my office and he's at home, but sometimes he's upstairs and I'm downstairs. It's such a fascinating thing to me because it's become this central way of communicating. Not that we don't talk to each other, we do, but especially for talking about both pragmatic things, actually everything, pragmatic things, emotional things, making jokes, talking about the news, and especially when we're stuck on a piece. Like, I find G-chatting with him, and sometimes with other friends, and just sort of throwing an idea out there, and then talking it back and forth. Then I cut and paste whatever I wrote, and then I put it into my file and use it for my writing. Like, I come up with more. If I'm stuck on something, nothing works better for me than actually talking it out loud.
Oh,
but honestly,
So you have G-chat. Are you using G-chat, say, versus the built-in Apple messaging versus WhatsApp? I mean, how did you arrive on GChat as the default?
Well, you know, it's weird because as we're talking about this, I realize that for a heavy technology user, I'm also just sort of a default setting person. Like, I was using Gmail and GChat was there. That's why. I mean, I have WhatsApp, but the thing is, because I have Gmail open on my screen and you can pop out the GChat box into the corner, which is what I always do, I have just found it more helpful.
Yeah.
Like, aside from my general distaste for Facebook, the Facebook chat interface is so terrible that my one friend who insists on talking to me on Facebook, it's because I love her so much that I continue to have a relationship with her. Because I'm like, just talk to me any other way. Like, text me, GChat, WhatsApp, like Signal, like, I don't know, come up with something. But for some reason, she insists on always keeping it on Facebook. It's weird how chat spaces have the feeling of like physical spaces where some of them are pleasant and some of them are unpleasant. And, you know, GChat just works for me as a thing. But again, I use it in a simple way. I just keep the box open in the corner of my screen. And I also talk a lot to, like, for instance, I'm friendly with Alan Sepinwall, who's another TV critic. So we just have a GChat, you know, it's the way I think a lot of people use Slack. It's the same, but where we just, you know, I'll just ask him, do you know when the show's coming out? Or, you know, we'll just, like, they're just people that I brainstorm with. It's just such a big part of my professional life to brainstorm with multiple boxes on the screen, just friends of mine or professional acquaintances.
And do you use Slack?
You know, I actually have a different friend who only uses Slack, and I tried to use it for a while, but I don't have any professional Slacks or haven't been invited to them if they exist. So I know that people are in these big Slacks with many people, and that's just not how I have the app, but I never use it. And for a while, there were some people I know who were in a mutual Slack, and I just dropped off it. For whatever reason, for me, I use GChat and text as a one-on-one thing. I feel like it would be exhausting to be in a group chat all the time, but maybe I'm missing out. We have a family text.
They don't have to be big. You can have two or three if that was worked for you. On Slack.
But there are also like so many ways I use texting. Like, obviously it's useful for like if you're running late and you're telling somebody where they are, things like that, that would be annoying in a phone call. But with my kids, for instance, they commute to their schools, and my sons always text me when they get there so that I know that they're there. And then I send them a Spotify song or sometimes a little emoji. Like, they're just all sorts of funny, satisfying kind of joke intimacies that go on. Sometimes when we're out at a party or even hanging out with the kids, Clive and I will text one another, which is a way of just communicating psychically, something that you don't want to say out loud.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've done this
at a dinner party
or... Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel this incredible gratefulness for the level at which, especially if you work at home a lot, like it provides me with a sort of floating in and out of intimacy with people that I actually have close, friendly, and very verbal relationships with, like where I sort of want to have a floating conversation all the time. But I have to say, Clive and I have been having that kind of conversation since we first started dating, because we were using AOL Instant Messenger at the time. and we'd both be at work and just, you know, talk all day long.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I actually find it a very, like, at one point I printed out a bunch of our early chats or something because I realized that they were going to be lost, and they were, you know, like filled with jokes that I found funny.
That's so cool. Do you have kids, Emily?
I do. I have an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old. Okay.
So Carla and I, we have teenage kids, and we find ourselves using text messages as a way to, like, whisper to each other without having the kids hear, you know, usually, like, complaining about the kids.
Yeah, this is definitely a thing. It's so
a great
helpful,
tool for
right?
That. Yeah, it totally is. They have no idea what we're doing.
I actually love the, I mean, it's funny. I used to work at New York Magazine. I always found it very unnerving because there was this point where the technology changed and then everybody on the website was totally silent, but you could feel them chatting all the time. but at the same time, I really come to appreciate the stealth quality of texting and chatting because, you know, you're on your computer, you can be talking with somebody in the same room, or you like they're like people text under the table all the time and things like that. But it can be a save. It can save you in an emergency when you really have to tell somebody, like, just a quick fact that you cannot deliver out loud.
Definitely. Yeah. That's good. So moving down the list, there's another Google product. We're locked into Google. Google Docs. Tell us about how you use that.
Well, Google Docs is where I write. And at this point, my workplace uses it. But when I first was starting there, they were using Microsoft Word, which is also great. But I do a lot of mutual editing with, you know, like I'll pass my doc over to my editor and he will do the editing in it. And then sometimes when Clive and I are working on something in the household, we'll create a shared doc together. I mean, it's just, it's the central place that I think out loud. Like, you know, I could name so many different tools that I use. Like, I also use Wunderlist. I use stickies all over my computer, not like physical stickies, the digital stickies, to make lists of things. I'm a psychologically disorganized person. So I have to make up ways that I have a bunch of tools out in the world organizing things for me. And I just switch from thing to thing. But
Google Docs, one of the things that I feel a little bit missing for collaborative work with Docs that Word has down very well, which is tracking changes from different people. Have you figured out a way to do that with Google Docs?
It does it, Kevin.
Well, you can, yep. But the thing is, what I did with my editor, and this is, again, really stupid because I know that the tracking changes thing is better in Word, but it's just the way that I think is when I would send him a first draft and then he would send me back a draft with notes either written in all caps or in brackets or something like that. And generally, as we go through, what I try to do is I make the changes and I bold them. I don't know why, but just psychologically, it's better for me if I bold things than if I just put it organically into the text and it shows up in red or something like that. I just never have been able to adjust to that. And I want to be hyper aware of the exact changes. And for some reason, I don't know. I can only speak for myself. That's why it works better for me. But I use Google Docs for so many things. Like, I basically, like, if I'm working on a feature, I have multiple docs open, in one of which I list all of my contacts for people. And another one is all of my transcriptions of the subject of the piece. And another one is all my secondary transcriptions. And then I make a third one where I just keep it open all the time and write down any ideas that come to mind. And then I have one that's a drafting one. And it's just the sheer flexibility of it being simultaneously on my computer and on my phone is what does it for me. Because when I'm working on a piece, I download it onto my phone and I work on it on the subway, in the park, when I'm standing in line. I find it helpful to be away.
So the phone app for Google Docs is good enough that you can actually do work on it.
I've written almost entire pieces literally on the F train.
Cool.
Like, if I'm stuck. Yeah. For me, some things that are the less flexible things about a tool can actually be a psychological or creative strength in it. And first of all, being on a train and just having the phone in front of me and using my fingers to make the changes, oddly, the weird pressure of finger typing in that way, I think actually helps versus my keyboard sometimes. Like when I'm stuck.
You mean because it slows you down, or what do you mean the pressure?
Yeah, I think it's the fact that it's not as easy to type actually oddly helps. I think it's the weirdness of being on the subway. I mean, I'm the kind of person who I like to write a lot in public places. I like to go to a cafe with my or a bar sometimes with my computer, because then I gain the illusion that I look like a writer. And I'm like, people are looking at me and they're thinking, she's writing something. What is it? And that makes me feel like I can write the thing. But the subway writing is different because it's actually this very weird, private, pressured thing where it's like I'm on the subway for 30 minutes and I'll pull up my phone and I've downloaded my draft and I will just go in there and in like 15 minutes can fix something that for hours I've been stuck on. I don't know why. It's just, to me, one of the things I do a lot, and this would work in anything, it's not just Google Docs, but it's like I move it from my phone to my computer. I change the font. I change the margins. Mm-hmm. Like just changing anything about the way the text looks helps.
That's interesting. I could see how that helps.
I work in the park a lot. Like, I'll go with my kids to the park, and then I think there's something about the private space of just taking a moment and going off by a tree and pulling up the dock, I'll get an idea. I mean, I can just speak for myself in this way, but I find it's like that is so valuable to me is the way that it always comes with me, the dock, and that I can open it anywhere and I never have to worry about it. I mean, I remember the horrible old days when you had to use disks and like be constantly transferring a version.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, Emily, we have time for your final fourth tool. I think you have a couple to choose from. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, actually, just because the ones that I'm talking about are so basic, and yes, I could probably go off on a long rant about how much I love stickies. I literally take notes on TV shows on them. I make lists of things, all this stuff. But I just got this thing, these Bose earphones that I have to say straightforwardly, like I got as a swag involved a festival that I'm in, the New Yorker festival. I got these Bose headphones because of it, and they're
which,
the most
which
amazing
Bose
thing.
Headphones did you get? Which ones? Did
well,
you
let's
get?
See. They're in front of me. They're Bose. I think it's like 700 or something. Sit online, and I
are
just hooked them up yesterday.
Are they the earbuds, or do they cover the whole ear?
They cover the whole ear. They're these big black ear things that cover the whole ear. They make me look like a DJ.
And they're the noise canceling ones.
Yes, correct. And I'm not even that interested in the noise canceling part. I have an iPhone and a computer, and the iPhone thing where you have to have the new kind of plug, mm-hmm. I'm constantly terrified of losing my headphones and I can't use the same plug for my computer as I can for my iPhone. It's driving me crazy. And these Bluetooth headphones, which I hooked up yesterday, can hook up both to my computer. I know I'm talking as though this is a miracle and these things have probably been around for a while, but once I could put these on and hook up both to my computer and to my phone, I felt like it was such a tremendous change for me, even in the last 2 days, because I watch a lot of TV both on my phone and on my computer. And the fact that I could just sort of prop up my phone against the computer and I could watch a video online and it would go right into my headphones. I just went to the gym today with it and not having it hooked up by a cord and just not having to think about it.
Right.
I don't have that much to say about it other than I love it.
So how do you watch TV on your phone?
Well, I have a million apps on my phone, any of which I could have chosen for this conversation. But I have a section in my phone that's just called television, although I stretched out the word for some reason, so it's like television. And in it, I have maybe 15, 20 apps. So I have like the Netflix app, Amazon, Hulu, but then also all of these different networks have different apps, so FX and CW and stuff like that. And you know, it varies how I watch things, and I watch on my computer a lot too, because if you're a TV critic, they send you screeners, and a lot of them come through streamer sites. This has all changed. Yeah. What did you say? A code?
You get a code, and then you can like look at an advanced screener on Netflix or something.
Yeah, each of them has a different setup. And if any people from TV networks are listening to this, you should know that TV critics are more likely to write about shows that have easy to use screener sites.
Yeah.
Because like, and I have to say, Netflix are some just clever demons, because they just changed it this year so that when I go to my normal Netflix screen, I have you have these little strips that say, you know, movies, TV, cerebral romantic comedies or whatever. I have one that says upcoming or previews or something, and from the main screen I can watch upcoming shows. So that's really good design, and actually encourages me to watch Netflix shows, because it used to be I had to go to a whole separate screener site. But anyway, I watch a lot that way and watch on my phone. And, you know, you can download things on your phone. So
sure.
That's recent. And I watch on the subway. When I wrote about Vanderpump Rules, I just downloaded 2 seasons on my phone. And then I just hooked up my earphones and walked around like it was an IV or something. And I would just walk around watching TV as though I was like taking in sangria. Which worked well for that show. There are some things that you're not going to watch that carefully. You just want to like binge watch them. So that's way of the world.
So I can see why these Bluetooth headphones, which compare both to your computer or your phone, would be the ultimate accessory.
Yeah, and I need to figure out how to do it for my flat screen TV, and I've got to figure that out. I mean, I just got them and they hooked up so neatly.
Can just leave them on. You don't have to take them off. You just keep them on all the time.
Well, actually, Clive mentioned that the one problem was it was like superior for me. He was calling to me from upstairs or something, and I literally couldn't hear him because they're ear canceling headphones.
So you have to have the text go from his phone right into your ears.
Yes, that would definitely help. Well, that's the thing, is he texted me from upstairs just to tell me, like, you can't hear me because I'm yelling from upstairs. So it's a very wired household. It's not like a huge house. So basically now my children are going to have their already TV-addled mother wandering around with ear-canceling headphones. I'm sure this will be healthy for everyone.
Well, this is a great collection. Thank you. And even though these tools are kind of known, you had a great spin on them, which really – to me, made them seem even more magical than they have for in a long time. So thank you for that.
Okay, well, I'm glad. It's strange talking about them, because I realized I there are things that I could have mentioned that I use in sophisticated ways, and these are not. But I'm so reliant on them that it is a little bit shocking.
It's great.
You know, and a lot of people have written about this, but they really are like GDocs and texting and all of these things are just, and Twitter too, are, it feels like they're the off ramps of my brain in a way that is both sinister and really wonderful, because it just, like, I feel like there's memories that I have that I can store through them. And I don't know, like, that's either a good or a bad thing once all the electricity goes down.
And before we go, we should just mention, Emily, that you have a book that very recently came out called I Like to Watch, Arguing My Way Through the TV Revolution. Is that exclusively your TV criticism writing for The New Yorker? Does it have other essays in there as well? Tell us a little bit about what's in it.
It has some new essays, and it's a collection both of my criticism and essays and some of my profiles, as well as some longer essays. It essentially makes a larger argument, like it's a collection, but it makes an argument about celebrating television as television and basically detaching TV from the kind of status anxiety that's haunted it in the past. And celebrating it on its own terms as a medium. But for the purposes of this podcast, the book also talks a fair amount about the way in which you can't detach what's happened with TV from what's happened with the internet. the two things are just completely linked.
Oh, that sounds interesting. TV would,
I mean, I wish, like, you know, it's funny. I want to write a whole specific essay on this, but I'm a TV critic for a bunch of different reasons, one of which I talk about in the book, which is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But another one of which is Television Without Pity, which was an anonymous discussion board that started around the turn of the century. And a place where a community of TV watchers could gather weekly to act like maniacs out of love and hatred of their show, sort of analyzing them telemodically, really transformed the nature of TV, because it meant that you could create shows that people had to puzzle through or that were slow and dense.
Yeah.
Because the internet could provide a place for people to gather socially and intellectually and treat it as a text. So the changes in technology, the fact that you're able to freeze things, stream things, share things, and discuss things is part of the nature of TV. And in my book, I sometimes discuss that explicitly, but it's weird because the book traces my criticism, and I could have written a whole overlay on it that showed how much the way I was watching the shows changed the way I responded to them. At one point in the book, I say that I probably could write a whole essay about the social impact of the pause button. And I do think that's
true. Because amazing thinking about that.
Anyway, so yes, that's the technological part of the book, but you know, it's about a lot of different things.
Cool.
So.
Well, that sounds good. I like to watch Arguing My Way Through the TV Revolution, and available everywhere that you normally buy books. Thank you so much,
and also
Emily.
An audiobook.
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Are you the reader on the audiobook?
I am the reader.
Cool.
I am the reader. Cool. It was a very good experience.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool. Thank you so
Emily,
much for having me.
This has been a blast. Thank you so much. Hey, everybody, it's Mark from the Cool Tools Podcast. I want to thank you for being a listener to Cool Tools. And I also would like to let you know about our Patreon page. If you would like to support the Cool Tools show, as well as our video channel, the website, and all the newsletters that we do, you can go to patreon.com/cooltools. That's just one word, Cool Tools, and pledge any amount you want. You could even pledge $1 a month. Every little bit helps. We have editors, we pay for transcribing costs, we pay our reviewers. Every bit of money that you contribute goes towards supporting the show. I'd like to give a shout out to our supporters of the Cool Tools Podcast. This week, I'd like to thank the following Patreon supporters: Bill Schuler, Bob Kay, Ryan Pelly, Carl D. Patterson, Chad Cosby, Chris Wieland, Chris Weirstook, Craig Tooker, Dan O'Brien, Dean Putney, Danelle Cunningham, Evan Barker, Graham Medlin, Hans Riesbeck, Helen Hegedus, Jerry Kearns, Jim Lesko, Jim Spofford, John Pollock, John Burdenbau, Keith O., Ken Altman, Les Howard, Lauren Bast, Mock Nerd, Malton Make, Mark Goebel, Matt Gromes, Michael Douglas, Michael Jones, and Michael Pecorini. Thanks to all of you for supporting the Cool Tools Show. We really appreciate it.